Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO, EO, EO 11, EO 11, EO 11. A dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of folding green, EO11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11.
Yeah, baby. All right. James Bostic here. And that was Sammy Davis Jr., EO11 from the smash box office hit motion picture, Ocean's 11, the original, not that George Clooney crap. Nice to be with you here on a Tuesday afternoon here in the Mountain State. Wow. Beautiful day out there today. Absolutely beautiful day. And I hope you had a great weekend. I want to talk about my weekend a little bit. It was very busy, but at the same time, very rewarding. I'm going to talk a little bit about some kids, some special kids. I coach my home county, Raleigh County here in West Virginia. I help coach their track team for Special Olympics. And I got involved with it a couple years ago. The teacher I work with, Jocelyn Woods, in the classroom there, she kept on me. Anyway, I did. And I didn't want to at first, but the more I was there, the more I realized I was supposed to be there. And it's been a tremendous blessing to me on a number of levels, and just a terrific time. And this weekend was West Virginia's Special Olympics Summer Games, and the track and field events were held at Laidley Field in Charleston, our capital city here in West Virginia. We had kind of a small track team this year, about half of what we once had. So we had about 11 kids, and about half of those kids came out of our classroom or were former students in our classroom. So we had a terrific time. The track and field athletes brought home 26 medals in the events that they ran and participated in. And it was just a great time, man. It was just a great, great time. It was a great time last year. It was a great time this year. Met some terrific kids, some terrific athletes from all over the state, and some terrific moms and dads, and kudos to all the support staff there at Laidley Field. The Charleston Squadron Air of the Air National Guard was on the scene and helping with everything. It was just terrific. So thank you to all the people who worked so hard to make all of that possible. And can't wait till next year. Terrific time. Speaking of kids, I want to share this with you. We've got to go back a little bit. You know, the Parkland shooting in Broward County a couple years ago. There was a school resource officer there by the name of Scott Peterson, who did not go in. He let this kid go in there and just shoot the place up. As a matter of fact, he hid behind a squad car waiting on other backup to arrive, to his everlasting shame. So that school resource officer, Scott Peterson, who ducked out last year at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School during the shooting, has been arrested. Ladies and gentlemen, he's been arrested on negligence, child neglect, and perjury charges. The arrest comes after a 15-month investigation into the actions of law enforcement after the February 14, 28 shooting at the school that killed 17 students and staffers, left 17 others injured. Peterson was the school resource officer there at that time when the shooting took place. And the Florida Department of Law the Florida Department of Law Enforcement's investigation showed that former Deputy Peterson did absolutely nothing to mitigate the shooting that killed 17 children, staff, teachers, and injured 17 others. Florida Department of Law Enforcement's Commissioner Rick Swearingen said in a statement, "There can be no excuse for his complete inaction, and no question that his inaction costs lives." Now, there was a thing, a program in Broward County that was also started out in Dade County, and it was a diversionary school discipline program, and it was called the Promise Program. And what it was, is it was a county school district policy aimed at reducing crime rates in school. Now, we don't have a whole lot of that going on up here in the Mountain State where I live. But in some places, Broward County, Miami-Dade, not just Florida, other places all over the country in big cities, crime in school is a big deal. I'm talking about assaults, sexual assaults. I'm talking about vandalism. I'm talking about robberies, crime. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to reduce crime statistics within the high schools there in Miami-Dade and in Broward County as well. But here's what they did. They didn't reduce crimes being committed at all. What they did is they reduced the number of crimes being reported and how they were dealt with. In other words, rather than being arrested or calling in the deputies if a sexual assault occurred or if a robbery or a beating occurred, they would put it down as school discipline. In other words, you beat up and robbed that little ninth grade kid because you didn't have anything else to do and it made you feel good to break his nose, then you get insulted, you got suspended. You didn't get arrested. You didn't get expelled. You had to stay out of school. And so this is the program that was in place, and this is the program that the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooter was a benefactor of. So in other words, this is a kid who had a criminal history. a criminal past. And rather than deal with him the way they should have, they dealt with him as if he were simply just another unruly boy. So, this corruption and the people that put these programs in place, as far as I know, are still there. And this corruption and these bad policies are systemic in the school systems in a lot of different places. And this is a really good example of what happens. You know, they were just massaging statistics. They weren't really being proactive about anything other than changing the numbers and cooking the statistic books. And in the meantime, 17 kids, teachers, and staff were killed and another 17 wounded. Forever changed. And the Broward County Sheriff and this useless piece of crap who hid behind his squad car while kids were being killed, and the superintendent of Broward County Schools and the guy that was part of this program from Miami-Dade, they don't care. They do not care. They don't stay awake over this. They're not going to cancel their vacation plans because of this. They're not going to care. Their life will go on. And shame on those bastards. Shame on every one of them. Wow, that was a bit of a downer, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. But we needed to talk about it. Here's something that ought to make the Bernie Sanders voters really just, man, these guys, I tell you, and you know what? I do speak critically to large groups of people all the time, and this is no exception. I'm going to do it here, too. A couple days ago, I saw this in American Thinker. NBC, the national broadcasting company, NBC polling data shows Bernie Sanders is a lock, a shoe-in, with low-information voters. It was on Meet the Press the other day, and it revealed a characteristic about Bernie Sanders supporters that's not exactly flattering. It turns out that apparently, the less you pay attention to politics, the more likely you are to support the socialist option for the 2020 Democrat presidential nomination. The less you're paying attention, the more likely you are to be a Bernie Sanders supporter. This is according to a Monmouth poll taken recently showing that Sanders is losing definite ground to both former Vice President Joe Biden and a suddenly much stronger Elizabeth Warren, who has jumped between 5 and 6 points in the polls since Joe Biden entered the race. The implication, of course, Sanders voters, low-information voters. Now, we all know people who aren't stupid that support Bernie Sanders. And if we don't know them personally, we know of them. Camille Paglia, for example, prominent Sanders supporter. Nobody would ever dream of calling that chick stupid. And she isn't. They might hate her. But they'd be on thin ice if they tried to question her intelligence. But politically disengaged might be correct in her case, given her scholarly focus on history and culture and the arts. And the same with some other prominent Bernie Sanders supporters. James Ogbe, Morgan Freeman, Ben and Jerry's co-founder Ben Cohen, and Cornel West. Wrong, but not stupid. In some cases, probably disengaged, or in West's case, probably a wannabe commissar. He's a longtime Red. But for a lot of people, low information is probably a better descriptor. And whether the people are bright or not doesn't matter. The effect is pretty much the same. Now, the Daily Wire says that Sanders supporters got a little upset at the poll, arguing that it was an ad from press for Joe Biden, and maybe, but more likely, the poll's calling it right. And a noisy vanguard without great numbers is hollering, errantly thinking that Sanders' support is widespread in the manner that their support is. But in a way, this poll obviously demonstrates that Sanders' support is built on a pillar of voter ignorance. And with voters who deep down really don't know what they're asking for and they don't pay attention, yet at the same time, you know, it kind of makes sense because socialism is all about pretty sounding things, free college, free healthcare, free pensions, free money, no guns, and a large side of open borders, all of which turn out to be false in practice. And the people who don't pay attention are the ones that's going to fall for it. More engaged people won't. We all know that socialism is enacted through demagogues these days, people that prey on others' ignorance, and Hugo Chavez is Exhibit A. Yet with the Democrats, you know, moving in this direction of a popular vote and count all the ballots, which reads ballot harvesting on indifferent voters who never intended to go to the polls, as well as unsought mail-in ballots, the Bernie phenomenon is sure to grow, but only as a phenomenon. A lot of news stories out there are already suggesting that Bernie's yesterday's news, or he's all washed up, but that may not be the case if he draws a lot of low information voters, and he can. The system, as Democrats are moving it, is almost guaranteed to create more Bernie voters. And it seems that it's already happening again. And what I'm talking about, you know, in the last election, they ripped Bernie. They just screwed Bernie Sanders and his voters. I'm talking about the DNC, Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee. They just screwed them. They rigged it with the superdelegates. And the thing of it was, even though he, you know, kind of a wheezing, puffing, muted, tired enthusiasm, because, you know, he was an old guy then. They still had it. And his supporters were pretty, you know, they were burning all the way. But then they got screwed. And I'm sure that there was a percentage of these voters that did not vote for Hillary. And they may have voted, some of them might have even voted for Donald Trump out of spite. But I would imagine there weren't that many protest votes. And I would say that these guys probably went ahead and held their nose and voted for Hillary Clinton, like a lot of people held their nose and voted for John McCain or Mitt Romney. But right now, Joe Biden is the establishment guy. And if they think Biden, is the guy that they can do the most with, that's where they're going to go. And you know what else? What happens to all that money that goes into these campaign war chests of the folks who don't make it? Do you think Bernie Sanders gave back all that money last time around? No. Do you think Hillary Clinton refunded what was left out of her? No. Do you think Elizabeth Warren will? Do you think that Pete, old gay Pete, you think he's going to do that? You think that Cory Booker or Kamala Harris or any of the other 65 Democrat nominees that are riding around in that little French Le Car? What? No, they're not going to give that money back. And I think a lot of them the opportunists know that they don't stand a chance for running for president, that this is just a con job, that this is just a fleece, a bamboozle. They're leading these guys down the garden path. They're selling them a bill of goods. They're grifting. They'll still maintain a certain level of prominence and influence within the Democrat Party, because they'll now be known as former 2020 presidential Democrat presidential candidate, and CNN contributor Kamala Harris has this to say. Yeah. And a lot of them are, you know, there are a lot of them are angling for just that. Low information voters. That's cool. And that makes sense. I mean, if you stop and think about it, all this pie in the sky stuff, we know it's got the money's got to come from somewhere. Somebody's got to pay for it. And I can't remember who it was, Churchill or Thatcher, I think, who said, you know, socialism's great until you run out of other people's money. And that's exactly right. Did I mention that school's out? School's out. Last day for the children in my school district was Wednesday. The last day for me was last Thursday, and hadn't a damn thing changed. I still have to get up early. I still have to go do stuff. Man, I remember in the ninth grade in 1977, which was like the biggest bummer of my entire summer vacation career. I had just gotten out of the ninth grade, and that summer I had to take a typing class at Beckley College. My buzzkill dad, who was a teacher up there, decided that idle hands are the devil's workshop. So he made me take a typing class. 1977, summer school, Beckley College, 15-year-old geekazoid, James Bostic, BL's boy, is in Donna Darlington's typing class. You know what I remember from typing class? ASDFJKL semicolon. Booyah. That's all I got. That's all I ever had. And we had those typewriters, these like Remington Selectrics that weighed 35 pounds. And they had no letters on the keys. We started out with letters on the keys once we get our way around. But then after that, we went to typewriters that had no letters on the keys. And you had the typing book over to the side. And God, I hated that. Ah, mother of pearl. I don't know how many times I cussed that man. Oh, well. Coming down to the bottom of the hour, I think I'm going to bug out of here a little bit early. We're going to get some music going. Come back, you know, the tag that I talked about, Bob Mueller and Andy Weissman did some selective editing. It's caught up with them. Could be more trouble. And we're going to be talking about that here in a little bit. Let me find some music. And we're going to put that on, and then we will be back with more of ACP right after this. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective, back after a brief musical hiatus. Good to be here with you. We do this live, by the way, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time at Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. That's where you go and you can type in Patriot Nation Radio Network. And there we are, 7 p.m. Eastern, Tuesdays and Thursdays, just like frickin' clockwork. We also have a recorded version of the show that goes out on Mojo 50 Radio, mojo50.com. You can go there. That's Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And the way they have it set up on their shows, you can go to the website, mojo50.com, and you can go ahead and listen to them as they're being played real time in the network's broadcast schedule, or you can just scroll down to the previous shows, pick out the one that you missed, and listen to it in its archived form. It's really, really cool. And we're happy to be a part of that, man. That's really a big deal. So,
geez, man, what do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Of course!
The brain. One of my role models. Oh, Pinky and the brain. Anyway, back to what we were talking about earlier. Now, a couple weeks ago, as you know, the Mueller report was released. And
Bueller?
No.
Bueller?
Oh, my God. As I was saying, a couple weeks back, the Mueller report was released, and the Democrats have been really, totally, completely all jacked up, all in. They put all their chips in the pot. They put everything on the line, convinced that the Mueller report was going to give them the hookup. And they were going to get, you know, it was just going to be a simple jump from the Mueller report to impeachment. But things didn't turn out the way they thought they were going to. And the Mueller report didn't come up with anything. It tried to come up with some stuff in the obstruction category in Volume 2. With these specious what-if kind of sort of possibly could be construed. If you squinted your eyes and held your face just right, you might be able to see it as obstruction. But all that was outweighed by the surrender of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pages of emails and transcripts and everything that the special counsel wanted from the White House. Not once did the president invoke his claim of executive privilege over any of this stuff while the investigation was going on. Not once. But he's being an obstructionist. Well, it didn't take very long. I think it was Tom Witten at Judicial Watch. A court filing comes up and it reveals how Andrew Weissman, Mueller's pit bull, and Mueller himself took a phone message by John Dowd, who was a counsel of the president, who was in a conversation with Michael Flynn's attorney. And Dodd points out the motives of this selective editing on the part of Weissman and Mueller is to create a fraudulent report. Now, here's the backstory on this. In the Michael Flynn sentencing phase, so we got to go back about a year or so, Judge Emmett Sullivan requested that the Mueller prosecution team provide records related to that case. And among the evidence that the judge was asking for, he ordered government to file on the public docket the transcript of the voicemail recording from President Trump's attorney, John Dowd, to Michael Flynn. The transcript of that voicemail recording was cited in the Mueller report as evidence that Team Trump was trying to obstruct justice by shaping witness testimony. So last Friday, the Mueller team released a transcript of the call. However, a group called Rosie Memos noticed that the released transcript clearly demonstrates and shows that the Mueller team selectively edited this transcript in order to weaponize their portrayal of this contact between John Dowd and Michael Flynn's lawyers. Now, what you need to do, I hate to do this, because I've got to paraphrase, and you know my philosophy on that. What happened was they took this voicemail, this transcript of a voicemail, and it's John Dowd, lawyer for the president, talking with a lawyer for Michael Flynn. Because if you remember, Michael Flynn was charged with colluding with Russians through a phone call to Ambassador Kislyak. And the things that were going on here were part of the transition from one administration to another. They were not unheard of. What he did was not illegal. They framed him, and they tripped him up on some kind of perjury charge, cost him his fortune. They threatened to go after his son if he didn't play ball. He was caught between a rock and a hard place. They squeezed him, and he didn't have anything else he could do. Mike Flynn's an honorable man, and he was hard done to. So what they do, God, I hate to do this, but okay. I'm going to read both statements. I'm going to read the original statement, and then I'm going to read the statement as it came out in the Mueller report. This is the original statement. Hey, Rob, this is John again. Maybe I'm sympathetic. I understand your situation, but let me see if I can't state it in starker terms. If you have... And it wouldn't surprise me if you've gone on to make a deal with and work with the government. I understand that you can't join the joint defense. So that's one thing. If, on the other hand, we have, well, there's information that implicates the president, then we got a national security issue, or maybe a national security issue. I don't know. Some issue that we've got to deal with, not only for the president, but for the country. So, you know, we need some kind of heads up just for the sake of protecting all our interests if we can, without you having to give up any confidential information. So, you know, and if it's the former, then, you know, remember what we've always said about the president and his feelings towards Flynn. And that still remains. But, well, in any event, we, you know, let me know. And I appreciate your listening and taking the time. Kind of a convoluted statement, but what they're talking about here is they're worried about what's going to happen to Flynn and how they need to be prepared for how the prosecution, the Mueller team, was going to misuse Flynn. And that's exactly what they did. Now, here's the statement as it appeared in the report. I understand your situation, but let me see if I can't state it in starker terms. It wouldn't surprise me if you've gone on to make a deal with the government. If there's information that implicates the president, then we've got a national security issue. So, you know, we need some kind of heads up just for the sake of protecting all our interests if we can. Remember what we've always said about the president and his feelings towards Flynn, and that still remains. Big difference. They took out about half of the original statement and turned it into something far more sinister than what it is. Here's what, let's see if I can find it here. Here's what Alan Dershowitz had to say about this with John Dowd on Sean Hannity's show just, I think, last night, maybe.
Former attorney John Dowd, also the author of the introduction to the Mueller report, Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz Mr. Dowd, counselor, I'll ask you. I wouldn't want my words twisted like that, especially considering what you said was perfectly ethical, legal, and honestly the right thing to do, as you had a joint defense leading up to that point.
Well, I had an obligation as counsel to the president to find out what was going on. And I'm so glad Judge Sullivan ordered the transcript, because we now know the truth. And we also know that this entire report by Mueller is a fraud. And we're going to find more of these things. Isn't it ironic that this man who kept indicting and prosecuting people for process crimes committed a false statement in his own report? By taking out half my words, they changed the kai, the tenor, and the contents of that conversation with Robert Kellner. And it's an outrage, and there's probably more of it.
You know, add to this, Professor Dershowitz, that in and of itself is an outrage, because you're literally changing the exact meaning of what the counselor said, number one. Number two, how embarrassing for Mueller last week to say, oh, I couldn't indict on obstruction because of a Department of Justice rule that doesn't allow or questions the ability of him to make a determination as it relates to whether you can or cannot indict a sitting president. And then you look at the team that he put around him with Andrew Weissman and company, all chronicled in Sidney Powell's License to Lie. And, Professor, you care about civil liberties. I care about civil liberties. This is every American needs to be concerned in all this.
This is a very, very serious issue. The distortion of the Dowd quote is very serious, especially since, remember, that a report by a special counsel is always going to be one-sided. Therefore, you have to trust it, because the other side doesn't have a chance to look at it and show what's wrong with it the way it would in an adversarial situation. If a lawyer made a representation like that to a court and said, this is the quote, and left out the crucial context, which showed, as John said, that what he discussed was not only absolutely proper, but obligatory for a counsel when you have a joint defense agreement to find out exactly what's likely to be used against your client. This is a
and
very
he said,
serious
but nothing
matter. We
inappropriate.
Have to find that first. Nothing
he
inappropriate. We have to find
right,
out first
he said that.
Who wrote that paragraph. Who wrote that paragraph?
I have a guess.
That is crucial. How did it get? I know. How did it get past Mueller? Why was it included in there? Remember, right from the beginning, I said before this report is made public, it should be given to the defense, and including the former defense attorney like John Dowd, to be able to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, find problems with it, file a report stating the defendant's position at the same time so the American public can judge which is more credible. This way it just turns out a one-sided
right, let me ask
report,
you this.
And it turns out it's totally distorted when
you
it
know,
comes to
another
the
good
John
report.
We now have the FBI professor giving special treatment to Hillary Clinton and her investigation. One, the exoneration written before anybody's even interviewed. That never happens. Allowing other people, including a witness, inside the room while she is being questioned by the FBI. Thirdly, they don't record it. They don't have the 302s. They brag about it. Strzok and Page brag about Loretta Lynch's role and that there's no way that they were not going to rig that investigation. I know you like the Clintons, but I think you like the Constitution, the rule of law, equal justice, and application of our laws more.
Look, I like to make sure that we're not weaponizing our criminal justice system. I think we have to use the criminal justice system only in extreme cases. We had here an investigation. It may not have been the perfect investigation, but James Comey concluded, and the Justice Department concluded,
but you acknowledge this doesn't happen to everybody else, does it?
She had done something wrong. Well, if you're the Secretary of State and previous Secretaries of State used home personal emails, then you have to ask yourself, was there any precedent for this kind of prosecution? So I'm satisfied that there was no prosecution of Hillary Clinton. I'm not satisfied with the way in which they've gone after Donald Trump. I think equal protection of the law requires less
right.
criminalization, not more criminalization.
John Dowd, last few words.
Sean.
Yes, sir. Go.
They not only went after Donald Trump, they went after his lawyers. I mean, that paragraph that they put out in that court is a smear of me and my reputation. And when I used to be a prosecutor, if anyone made an allegation about a lawyer and what he was doing,
it's outrageous.
And what he was crossing the line, I'd
you
call the lawyer
out.
And didn't talk to
out.
Him.
All
now
right,
I met with Mueller and Quarles the whole time. They never said a word to me. Instead,
right,
they
guys,
pulled this ambush in their report.
All right, I'm up on a heartbreak, guys. Thank you both.
Okay. This is just one small thing. But again, you see what they did. They took half of John Dowd's words out of that, rearranged the rest of it to make it look implicating of bad things against the president. I don't think this is going to be the only thing that we see. I'll bet right now there are people who are judging the excerpts from transcripts that were placed within the Mueller report with the originals. And I bet we're going to find more than one example of this kind of egregious weaponizing, the selective editing of these transcripts to manipulate the findings of this report. That's what they're doing, people. I'm telling you, this thing is huge. It's huge. Watergate? Are you kidding me? Please, look. This is serious. We are still, okay, they're still trying. This is a coup d'etat, people. And they're still trying. They're in the middle. They're discovered in the middle of doing it. Excuse me. And they're still doing it. They think they can carry this off. They think they can get away with this. They think they're going to ultimately triumph. And by God, you know what? They may. I can only think of one thing that can stop them. And that's us. By this kind of awareness, by making everybody know, all right, if this one thing, which probably took up about two-thirds of a page in this 448-page report, how much of the rest of it has been similarly doctored? How much of the rest of it has been likewise selectively edited? Do we have possibly a clearer understanding of why Bob Mueller is not interested in testifying? Can you imagine the questions? And this is something I tossed out on the Mojo program on Sunday. What if Robert Mueller said, you know, he agreed to testify and they hauled him in there? What if Robert Mueller were called upon under oath to answer a question or series of questions that would conceivably or potentially unravel this whole deal? What would he do? He knows. You know, let's just take the question, a simple one, one that everybody's been on. Mr. Mueller, when did you first come to the conclusion that there was no collusion, that there was no obstruction? At what point during your investigation did you reach this, but you know what, kids, I do this for a living, so don't try that at home. You know, at what point in the investigation did you figure out there wasn't anything there? 6 months in? 3 weeks in? 30 minutes before you finished up the report? What? When? When did you find it out? What does he say? What does he say? to see what would it be like? What would happen, and I, you know, and this is why I don't want to testify, what would happen if special counsel Robert Mueller, under oath, had to invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege? I respectfully decline to answer that question on the grounds that it may incriminate me. At this point for this question, I would like to go ahead and invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege. Wow! Wowie, wowie, wow! What would happen then? Positively insane. Robert Mueller can't testify. He can't really speak with a great deal of authority as to what's in that report, and he knows it. That's why he doesn't want to testify. That's why he can't testify. But you know what? They should subpoena his ass and haul him back in there and put him in that position where he has to testify publicly. Don't be surprised if they do. Do not be surprised if they do. Wow, man, I had like, okay, we did the low information thing. I still had some stuff about the shift head. Rachel Maddow's ratings. You would have to unbolt the toilet from the floor and look down in the pipe. That's how far down it is. She's past the toilet. She's on her way to the sea. She's in sad shape. She is. It's down now to an all-time low. Actually, all of CNN is in pretty sad shape. They've suffered a double-digit crash when it's come to their viewers. And do you know why? Well, it's an easy one. They promised the death of the president. They promised this president's head on a stick. They promised that this president and members of his family would be handcuffed, rubber hosed, maced, beaten, and perp walked. And it didn't happen. It's not going to happen. But every night there was a new, you know, bombshell story. Another nail in the lid of his coffin. Okay, we're done. 90 seconds. ACP heard here live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We also do a live program at Mojo 50 Radio, mojo50.com, 4 p.m. on Sundays. News and commentary, just another version of this, and we have a great time doing it. You want to check them all out. That's all the time we got for now. We will be back on Thursday, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. Thank you all so very much for listening. We'll see you then. God bless you. God bless America.